Okay, so I will talk about a joint work with Mark Braverman. So let me leave this name prominently here. And as the title says, I will discuss an algorithm for solving Dirichlet problem. So, well, that's a very classical thing. We have a domain in RD, which is bounded. We have a function which is continuous on the omega, and we want to find function u which is continuous on omega union with the omega, and which is harmonic here inside the domain. So this is the classical Dirichlet problem. F is a boundary condition. So this is the Dirichlet problem with boundary condition F. Given continuous function, you want to extend it inside by harmonic function. And of course there are millions of methods for solving this numerically. It's a very classical thing. And the method which I will be talking about comes from the following theorem of Kakutani, that actually to solve this, all you need to do, you need to run a Brownian motion. So let me explain what it is. So you have point x inside, you have function f on the boundary, you run a Brownian motion till the first time it hits the boundary. Let's call it xt. Xt is the first intersection of d-dimensional Brownian trajectory starting with x is the omega. So it's a random point. Now the famous theorem of Kakutani says that this function u, the point x, is just the expectation of the value of f at this random point. That's all. So now all we need to do, we need to solve this numerically. We need to somehow emulate this Brownian motion efficiently. Well, so the question becomes how to find this point xt quickly. Well, there is a naive way. And the naive way is the following. Well, Brownian motion is the limit of the random walk on the lattice. Draw a lattice, start a random walk there, wait till it hits the boundary. So we draw a lattice, say of size epsilon, and, well, we find approximately a point x here, and run a random walk. The problem with this algorithm is that running time of this is about 1 over epsilon squared, if your lattice size is epsilon. To solve this with roughly the precision comparable to epsilon, well, you need to spend this much time. One can do, of course, much better. So the algorithm, which is called walk on spheres, was suggested by Müller in 1956, and it's the following. So instead of just emulating Brownian motion, you notice the following, that if you take your point x and you draw a sphere around the point x, then of course you know where the Brownian motion would hit the sphere. It's a random point on the sphere which is uniformly distributed. So what you do, you draw a sphere of large radius here. And how large? Say let's draw a sphere of the radius half the distance from x to the omega. So consider this sphere and select a point there and random.
Wow.
So
99.9% of the distance.
Oh, that's a good question. So, of course, the original algorithm was just the distance. The problem is that then you hit different distortion estimates. So if you try to do it numerically, then, of course, 99.9 would work here perfectly. But then your distortion estimates away from the boundary would be worse. So if you try to next step, so of course, selecting a random point here, well, it's also something which requires, well, something. And if you, the closer you are to the boundary, the finer should be your mesh for selecting this random point. That's a problem. So 1/2 is as good as any, as good as 99%. Anyway, so that's what we choose, and x1, say, would be a random point on the sphere. So this is a sphere now, not a ball. Okay, and then you do the same procedure with x1. So you pick a random point x1, you select a random point x2 here. So then you select a random point x3, I don't know, somewhere here. And so on. So you get a process XT. And this is called walk on spheres. And what is relatively soft estimate is that this limit exists almost surely. And this point x infinity has the same distribution as this exit point of the Brownian motion. Because essentially what you do, you just run a Brownian motion, you just forget about the trajectory, you just look at the exit. Okay, so this is algorithm. And of course, what kind of running time can you expect here? So the question which I'm interested in is, when does XT first hit a epsilon neighborhood of the omega? So when would it get close to the boundary? Well, let's see the trivial thing. So the best you can hope for, well, each time you kind of have the distance. So the best possible is logarithm. It's something of this sort. So the t is approximately log of 1 over x. And in many situations, it's actually true. So let me now briefly talk about the history of this. So the first work about this, well, I never remember how to spell him. Motu or Motu? Motu. In 1959. And he shows that actually if omega is a convex domain, then it's indeed true. So this is the rate of convergence of this algorithm. Then, well, there was another work by Mikhailov who showed that for certain 2D and 3D domains, this is also the same estimate works. And, well, there was a work of Benedict and Jones, which was unpublished, so I'll date it approximately at 85, where they did the same for the case when d omega is nice planar fraction. Say, counter set like. And they just needed to compute harmonic measure with certain precision, and they were really interested in good numerical algorithms. So what got me actually interested in this problem was the condition here. So let me state it. So what are the certain 2D and 3D domains? Michaelis conditions. So for 2D domains, they are actually quite natural. You assume that at every point of d omega, there exists an angle gamma alpha outside of omega, in omega function, for some fixed alpha. So this is, well, very natural condition. Well, so maybe this is a good result. Okay, so what happens for 3D domains? So for 3D domains, it's also a cone condition. So you assume that there is a cone at the outside, but the surface angle should be greater or equal than 123.5 degrees. And somehow when I looked at it, I understood that, well, there is a room for improvement here. Yes. Yeah, it's a solid angle. So there should be a solid angle outside at every point on the, of the omega, there should be a solid angle of this size. The shape of the angle is not important. Anything. And actually, as we will see, it's really, well, it's really not important. It can be non-convex. So this is in three dimensions. So in dimension two, it can be anything. Anything. So any positive angle, as long as it is uniform. Mm-hmm. Okay, so. And, yeah. And, now I believe what I will present is a definite answer to the question about what the running time is.
So another question. How many degrees are there in a sphere?
That's a great question. 720, right? Yeah. 720, right. 4 pi. 4 pi. 4 pi, yes. 720. Well, but, you know, I would not vouch for exactly 123.5. It was something like that. And so actually, of course, the real condition has nothing to do with angles or anything. It has, of course, something to do with boundary behavior. So first let me remind you the notion of beta dimensional Hausdorff content. So this is infimum over all coverings of some set E of sum of adj to the beta. So this is the dimensional Hausdorff content. And the condition is the following. So definition omega in RD is called alpha set if there exists some positive constant such that for every x in d omega the Hausdorff content of B of XR. So I'm sorry for this notation. So here B is a ball. So the whole ball intersects with the complement of C greater or equal than constant times R D to the alpha and beta here, sorry, H D to the D minus alpha. So D minus alpha dimensional Hausdorff content should be at least R to the power D minus alpha. So let me immediately give some examples. So of course any smooth Slonvik's domain is what is 0 sec actually. Right, because here simply the volume is certain proportion of the size. Well, any omega with omega c connected, well, that's d minus 1 sec. Because near every point of the boundary, you have at least a continuum. Continuum has a dimension 1 with uniform estimates here. So, okay. And now I claim that everything depends on this alpha. So, the theorem. I would like to present is the following, that, well, first, if alpha is less than 2, then walk on spheres converges in this time, in the optimal time, in the logarithmic time. If alpha is equal to 2, then the rate of convergence is actually the square. And finally, if alpha is greater than 2, then this rate of convergence is, unfortunately, it's no longer a logarithm. It's 2 minus 4 over alpha. 1 over epsilon to this power. So it always beats original naive estimate with the square here. But as domain gets thinner and thinner, it of course gets worse. So one little remark here is of course that the case alpha equal 2 is should be special, because if Hausdorff dimension of E is less, so equal than D minus 2, then E is invisible for Brownian motion. So of course this phase transition should have happened in codimension 2. So E is a set in RD. So if you have a set in RD with codimension 2 or greater, then Brownian motion would never hit it. So if you start the Brownian motion, it would hit it with probability 0. So for example, imagine a point on sorry for the notation. So here is a set, and d omega is the boundary of our domain. So if the statement here is the following: if we have this thickness condition of the boundary, so if near every point the boundary at least d minus alpha dimensional, and again this is. This should be some uniform estimate, so we need this type of thing. Then it's true. And so for me, again, E has nothing to do with omega. Just a set. So, of course, Brownian motion would always hit a boundary. It would just wouldn't hit the small part of the boundary, which is attached to the point X. Okay, and another thing about this theorem that, of course, well, this estimates are tight. also exist alpha sec domains for every alpha with exactly this rate of convergence. So it's, well, in this terms, this is a complete characterization. So there is one thing hidden here, and let me immediately tell what it is. Of course, what I failed to mention in the beginning, that this problem, of course, doesn't always have a solution. It has a solution only if the domain omega is regular. Imagine you're in a plane, you have a domain, you have a point inside, you remove this point, it doesn't matter. Your solution of Dirichlet problem would never know about the value of your function at this point. So of course this is solvable only for regular domains. And if you have a regular domain, this condition u is equal to f, which I also didn't write, is satisfied only at the regular points. So now, the question for which I still don't know the answer is the following. So regular in this sense means that for every continuous function on d omega, the solution satisfies this at this point. So in domain is called regular if it's true for every boundary point. So the question for which I don't know the answer is the following. Suppose that omega is regular domain. So what is the rate of convergence? Okay, so it actually couldn't vary a lot. So alpha sec for alpha less than 2 implies regular. That's very easy to see. And regular with some uniformity assumptions implies 2 sec. So the answer here is between log and log squared. But, well, the question is it true that it's always logarithm for any regular domain? Well, maybe again with some uniformity conditions. Definitely you can spoil things a little bit on different scales, but suppose that you have regular with some uniformity condition, is it true that it's the rate of convergence is logarithmic? I don't know. Okay, so now let me tell a little bit how the proof goes. So let me start with a very easy case. Suppose that we live in R2, and this is just an arbitrary domain, so it's 2 sec. Then the great thing about R2 is that this function, logarithm of z minus x, this function f of x, it's harmonic in omega if z is a point of d omega. Okay, so let us consider the function u of x, say of maximum over all z in d omega of minus log z minus x. To make it positive. So this is it's a maximum of harmonic functions. So this is, it's superharmonic. Rather subharmonic. Subharmonic, yes. So I always mix up when I take minimum maximum here. So let's take the maximum here. So this is a subharmonic function. So what happens here? Well, let us look at u of xt. So xt is, well, is our Lorentz spheres. So it's a sequence of these points uniformly distributed. So let's look at the values here. What we will notice, let's look at the expectation of yt with respect to yt minus 1. So conditioned on yt minus 1, what is expectation of yt? Let's see. This is actually a very easy thing. So you have this xt minus 1. You have a disk around it here. You have this point xt uniformly distributed on it. U is subharmonic. So what could happen with this expectation? Just the average over the sphere. So this expectation is greater or equal than yt minus 1. So this thing is actually super Martingale. And let me notice another thing now. So suppose, well, this is your point xt minus 1. What could happen with xt? Well, it could, of course, lie farther away from the boundary. But with certain probability, it lies twice as close. Well, it lies twice as close with probability zero. But the distance from xt to d omega is greater than, I don't know, is rather less than 2/3 distances from xt minus 1 to d omega. If you look at the probability of this event, well, no, this is certain probability. It's definitely greater than 1/10. So it means that what happens here is that with probability greater than 1/10, yt is greater than yt minus 1 plus log of 3/2. You got 2/3 closer to the boundary, this guy increased with this small probability. So on average, yt is no less than yt minus 1, and sometimes it increased. So which means that if you look at this expectation, this is greater than some constant. Because with certain probability, well, 1/10 log 3 to here. Okay, so now, well, this is a pretty familiar thing. So imagine that you would have equality here, and you have an inequality here. That's like a random walk. It's like a one-dimensional random walk. So it would take it a certain time, well, to get to a certain level. So yt hits level m in time m squared. Right? If you started at some point x0 at some fixed value y0 to hit the level m, and in average, it would take you this time, m squared. Now, let's see what is the question that we're asking. We want to get to the distance epsilon to the boundary. It's the same as to say, so distance from xt to d omega is less than epsilon is the same as, yeah? So, well, it becomes larger than m in time m squared. So if you run it for m squared steps, it would be larger than M. So it's a very rough statement, of course. It's just, well, imagine a random walk. It's just an intuition, because, well, here you have certain increment of this on the square of the distance between them. So it's now this is equivalent, of course, to the fact that yt is greater than log of 1 over epsilon. So it would happen. So this happens in log 1 over epsilon squared. Okay, so again, this is not a proof, but it's very easy to make into a proof. And, well, as you can see, it's trivial, and what we wondered with my co-author is why it avoided people for so long. Maybe because they looked for logarithmic estimate and the square somehow was bad for them. Anyway, so this is relatively easy. Now, what do we do in high dimensions? So in high dimensions, so let me point out the main ideas here. So the one idea was some function, this function u, an energy function, which behaves logarithmically near the boundary, and which is subharmonic. And another thing was that this function, there should be a definite increment. So when you make one step of your walk on spheres algorithm, this function should increase by a certain amount. In this case, not the function itself, but the square of the function. And actually, another thing which is visible from here is that to get a non-logarithmic estimate, but an estimate, you need a definite drift. So you don't want just this here. To get a logarithmic estimate, you need something like plus constant here. So if you have a definite drift, of course, no, after you run it for a certain number of steps, the drift would overcome everything and you will get closer to the boundary. So again, this is just an intuition. And now, how do we construct this energy function? So now omega is, again, it's in the beginning in Rd, and it's alpha thick. Let me actually restate alpha thickness condition. So alpha thick is actually equivalent to the following. Well, it's equivalent to the fact that there exists for every x in d omega, there exists measure mu. So Borel measure, not necessarily probability measure, just a positive Borel measure, such that first, if you look at a disk, or rather the ball of every of radius r, well, it's the measure of this should be less or equal than r to the d minus alpha, and for the measure of the balls near the point, well, it should be, there should be a uniform estimate from the other side. So this is exactly the same as alpha thickness, this condition. And, well, it's a fairly trivial exercise in, I don't know, Hausdorff measures, whatever. So, now, well, our analog of function u would be a sort of Newton potential of this measures. So let me be a bit more precise here. Let us denote by M the class of all forgot the main condition. Otherwise it would be non-interesting. Mu should be supported outside power. Okay, so we consider all the Borel measures mu, which satisfies the first condition and the third condition. So mu of B of phi R is less or equal than R D to the alpha, and support of mu is on omega C. So let me start with the case alpha less or equal than 2. So what we can do here, we can consider alpha this potential. Of a measure mu is, well, which is defined as u mu alpha point x is just, well, d minus x to the power d minus alpha. So when alpha is less or equal than 2, this function is actually subharmonic. And when, so just a side remark, when alpha is equal to 2, this is exactly harmonic. And now what we do, we define our energy function u of x to be the supremum of this u alpha mu of x, where supremum is taken over all mu and m. So what happens here, we take all the measures which, well, which are d minus alpha dimensional and leave outside of omega. Look at this. Now, what is beautiful about this, well, beautiful in the sense that it's similar to two dimensions, is that it grows logarithmically near the boundary. Why? Well, it's not clear from this, right? Let me just do integration by parts, and this is just d minus alpha mu of b of x r over r d minus alpha plus 1 dr. So if I write it like this, of course it's clear that if mu behaves like this, this cannot grow more than logarithmically, and if we have this estimate, then it exactly grows logarithmically near the boundary. So it's very tempting to just, well, in this case, repeat the construction which we had for two-dimensional case. Well, there is a problem here. The problem is roughly the following, that from all this discussion, it's clear that this, we have this estimate. Well, it seems rather, well, innocent. Well, we just have a constant here. The problem is that, well, this is a constant in the logarithm. So this is distance to certain power. So what could happen is that say, well, you live somewhere here, this is your point x, this is your closest point, and, well, it somehow affects the value at x, but the minimum is reached by mu, which lives somewhere here at this point. So what would happen is that for many steps, you will get closer and closer to Y, but you would be controlled by something totally different, so you would never get the second estimate that we need. You would never get the estimate that you got smaller with certain probability with each step. And this is bad. Okay, so now let me state a technical lemma, which I definitely wouldn't prove, but let me state it, that actually, well, life is not that bad. So lemma is say for alpha equal to 2, that there exists some delta such that if distance from z to d omega is less than, let me be a bit more careful. So x is the point inside of omega, y is the closest to x point on d omega. One of them, if there are many. Then if z is yet another point in omega, and distance from z to y is less than delta distance from z to x, then u of z is greater than u of x plus 1. So again, it doesn't follow from this estimate because of this power here. So if I would put some power here, sure, this would be exactly the same estimate, but there is a constant here. So let me again illustrate. So what I am saying is that if you have some point x here, this is the closest point on the boundary, that if we much closer to the boundary than x, then our u has increased. And this one is just the logarithm of y minus x. But here, it's the u at point x could be coming from mu from this point. So this is, there is a construction here, actually. So you look at the optimal measure for the point x, well, which lies somewhere on the boundary, and then construct a new measure, essentially from the measure at y, which is equal to this measure at y close to y and equal to our original measure far from y, and then you do some estimates and you get this. Okay, why does it help? Well, it helps because of the following reason. So we know this is our point x, our point y, and we know that if we got here, our life became great. Our function u increased by 1, and we can apply the previous reasoning. Well, definitely in one step we won't do it. But in fixed number of steps, with certain probability, we'll hit this. So for some k, it depends on delta. Xt plus k is this inequality is is true. With certain probability, with some fixed probability p. And then we can, well, this would mean by our lemma that this thing, expectation of now yt plus k minus yt squared is greater than this p, because with, again, with certain probability, this difference is at least 1. So the expectation is, of course, greater than k. And we can exactly apply the same reasoning as we did in one dimension. And so this gives us log squared. Okay, now what do we do for logarithms? So here it's a bit finer. Just enough. So now let me, instead of writing the precise statement, let me just try to give an intuition. So when alpha is less than 2, this function u mu alpha is actually very much subharmonic. So there is a certain drift. So if you just look at the value of this function with respect to 1 mu, there would be a certain drift in the integral when you get closer and closer to this one point. The problem is again that this mu can have nothing to do with the point which is closest to the point x. So it's quite possible that maybe, well, there is no drift. And again, the same amalgamation construction which was used here actually gives us that, well, you can always organize a drift. So there are basically two alternatives. Either your extremal measure for x is gives certain mass to certain neighborhood on y, and then what I just said can be made rigorous, that there is a definite drift in the value of this u mu alpha. Or it doesn't, but then it's small after certain number of steps. And then there is another function which would do better for you. So anyway, what you would get is that now expectation of yt plus k minus yt, conditional yt, is greater than some c, for some k and c, which of course depend on dimension and everything. So this is what this is a drift. And so, of course, for this to get to the level log 1 over epsilon, well, you need exactly log 1 over epsilon steps. Log 1 over epsilon divided by c, roughly speaking. Okay. So, well, I still have a few minutes. Let me say what happens in the case alpha greater than 2. So there, the problem is that all of this breaks down, as it should. And unfortunately, this function is no longer subharmonic. So, well, you make it subharmonic. So you just consider u of x to be the supremum over all mu and m of u mu 2 of x. So the last harmonic guy. So this function is, well, it's subharmonic. But that's all. So it does not grow like logarithm any longer. But it's easy to see that it grows like one over epsilon to the power d minus alpha near the boundary. And then you can work with it. So then you can estimate the number of steps needed for this to grow to a certain level. But again, so since instead of the logarithmic thing here, you have 1 over epsilon to the alpha minus 2, sorry. So again, since here you estimate like this lemma actually are not needed, so you do a finer analysis of the jump of the function yt, well, how many big jumps you can have. And, well, it's also doable. And finally, there are also examples, of course. So for an alpha is less than 2, there is nothing to prove here, of course. Well, that's the optimal rate of convergence anyway. For alpha equals to 2, well, what you do, you put a mesh of the size log 1 over epsilon by log 1 over epsilon. So a mesh of points just inside our disk, unit disk in R2. This is definitely a 2-sig domain, it's a subset of R2. And then again, it's relatively soft to see that this, because you have this relatively small holes, it would take log 1 over epsilon squared step to get to the boundary. So the boundary, the essential boundary lies here. But this net would prevent the walk to really just go directly to the boundary. So you can again check here. And well, for alpha greater than 2, well, it's essentially multi-dimensional version of the same. So you just look in RD and you, for non-integer d minus alpha, you just attach a small counter set to make up for the difference. And then, well, again, just some relatively soft estimates to see that they prevent your random walk from reaching the boundary in, well, small number of steps. Well, that's all. Thank you.
So there
are other methods. So there is a method for which it was known that for all smooth domains it converges with logarithmic speed. And it was a method which used estimates on the Green function. And so one thing which I kind of forgot to mention, that of course I would not claim that this is the best practical method. Of course, you know, the moment you know something about the domain, you can use estimates on Green function to improve your rate of convergence. So this was just a theoretical question. We wanted a method which works for any domain, for arbitrary domain. And this is more or less the only one which does. So again, if you know something about the domain, there are ways to optimize it. But this is actually a great question. I don't really know if it's possible to solve problem for alpha sig domains by any other method, in logarithmic or log squared or non-polynomial time, that I don't know.
Thank you.